When this podcast goes live, I'll be preparing to become a guest speaker at Twin Cities Pagan Con, put on by Twin Cities Pagan Pride. I am so excited and honored for this opportunity, and I thought it would be fun to do an episode all about paganism, neo-paganism, and even Wicca to kind of call in all of this pagan awesomeness. And if you're listening to this because you and I met at PaganCon, special hello to you.
Hello.
I enjoy history. I enjoy spirituality. I enjoy nature. Therefore, I thoroughly enjoy paganism. It's like the most beautiful culmination of all of my favorite things. There is so much to learn about paganism and its modern revivals. And in the very early days of Spiritually Inspired and the Spiritually Inspired podcast, I did a whole series about the Wheel of the Year, or at least the modern interpretations of it. And it took me at least a year to do that whole series, but it's still really popular on this podcast, some of my most downloaded episodes. If you listened and enjoyed those episodes, I'm sure you will enjoy this one too. I've learned a lot over the last handful of years about paganism while I was exploring my own spiritual interests and what resonates with me on a really personal level, and I'm going to share a bit with you today about what I've learned. This topic was also requested by some members in our free Facebook group, so I know there's some interest out there in the community as well that want to learn more about paganism and as well as Wicca. If you've been looking for a spiritual path that isn't necessarily tied to a specific religion, but does emphasize a beautiful relationship with nature and whichever deities you resonate with, stay tuned. You're about to shatter the f*** out of your manifesting ceiling because you're tuning in to the Spiritually Inspired Podcast, your number one resource for grounded spirituality and working with the law of attraction the right way. I'm Sarah Ray, I'm your manifesting coach, and this is the podcast where I teach mystics like you how to manifest on purpose, and hopefully get you to laugh at least once per episode. New episodes filled with manifesting, mindfulness, and magic come out each Friday. Give us a 5-star rating wherever you happen to be listening so we can reach more modern mystics with spiritual awesomeness. Yes! And now, a quick word from this week's sponsor. All the time and energy it takes to produce this podcast, as well as sharing free Reiki healings on the internet, is sponsored by my incredibly supportive group of monthly members. You all exude spiritual awesomeness, and I adore every single one of you. One of the best ways to manifest abundance for yourself is to share your abundance with others. And I am eternally grateful that my monthly supporters choose to share their abundance with me, making everything I do with Spiritually Inspired possible. From this podcast, to our free weekly circles and group readings, to the abundance of crystal Reiki shares available on YouTube, none of that would exist without their patronage. And I thank you for your support from the bottom of my heart. Besides my infinite gratitude, monthly members also receive special benefits only available to them, and this includes weekly guided meditations that are infused with crystal Reiki, plus access to the entire backlog of previously shared meditations, monthly personalized tarot card readings for each individual member. That's right, every single member gets a mini tarot reading every single month to provide them with individualized guidance for the entire month ahead, as well as discounts on all private and group sessions, workshops, courses, and anything else available on the spirituallyinspired.co website. I sincerely hope my monthly members enjoy these gifts. I love giving to them each month because their support is so meaningful to me. And I would love it if you too would consider becoming a supporting member of Spiritually Inspired. If you have benefited from my content, if you feel better after our Reiki shares, if you have learned anything new from me, consider becoming a patron or even just sharing a one-time donation. Head to spirituallyinspired.co/membership to sign up monthly or yearly, or just share whatever abundance feels right for you. May your charitable gift come back to you threefold. Thank you for your support. Now, let's start the show. So let's start with the history of paganism. To really answer this question, what is paganism? We got to look back in time. And I'm sure you already know some things about it, especially as it relates to Christianity and other organized religions. But for now, let's focus on the historical aspects of this ancient and somewhat mysterious religion, just so we can have some background knowledge. Paganism is an umbrella term encompassing various spiritual beliefs and practices that predate the spread of major organized religion, specifically Christianity. Its history is diverse, it's complicated, and it reaches across many regions and cultures across many centuries, even a millennia. The first thing to know is that paganism has ancient roots. That is true. That's one of the reasons why I personally love it so much and find it so incredibly fascinating, because I really enjoy looking back that far in human history. Paganism's origins can be traced back to ancient civilizations such as the Sumerians, the Greeks, the Romans, the Celts, the Norse, and many others. These cultures developed complex systems of beliefs, often centered around nature, mythology, and polytheism, which, by the way, means that there are many gods and goddesses that are acknowledged and worshipped within the religion instead of just one. Before the spread of monotheistic religions like Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, where only one god is acknowledged and worshipped, paganism was prevalent pretty much everywhere, and it was inseparable from everyday life. You didn't really call yourself pagan, you just had many gods and goddesses that were part of your everyday life. And just remember that this is an umbrella term referring to an ancient polytheistic religion that was essentially widespread and centered around nature pretty much everywhere in the ancient world. So I wanted to quick talk about some key regions where paganism was prominent, because I find this really interesting. So first, there's the ancient Near East. So in the ancient Near East, we're talking about Mesopotamia, which is modern-day Iraq, Egypt, Persia, which is modern-day Iran, and Anatolia, which is modern-day Turkey. Polytheistic religions were widespread and really common. This just kind of was the way of the world back then. These civilizations worshipped a pantheon of gods and goddesses, such as the Sumerian deities in Mesopotamia and the Egyptian gods like Ra and Osiris and Isis. I'm sure you're familiar with those ones. There's also classical Greece. Ancient Greece was a hub of a pagan religion and mythology, with city-states dedicated to various gods and goddesses. The Greeks worshipped deities such as Zeus, Athena, Apollo, and Artemis, among many others, and their religious practices included rituals and festivals and oracles, very much resembling neo-paganism, which is modern-day paganism. Then, of course, there's the Roman Empire. Paganism was really prevalent throughout the Roman Empire, which, you know, was basically a good amount of the ancient world was considered to be part of the Roman Empire. And this encompasses areas like Europe, North Africa, and, of course, the Near East as well over time. The Romans adopted as well as adapted the deities and religious practices of the Greeks, but they also worshipped their own deities such as Jupiter, Juno, Mars, Venus, and Neptune, of course, among many others. And this is where I personally feel like it's really connected with me personally, is the Celtic lands, because this is where my heritage comes from. So I find this part really interesting. The ancient Celts, who inhabited parts of Europe, particularly in areas now known as Ireland, Scotland and Wales, and England, France and Germany, they practiced their own indigenous pagan religion. And Celtic paganism involved a really strong reverence for nature, sacred sites out in nature, and deities such as the Morrigan, Brigid, and Lu. And this is kind of where the modern day Wheel of the Year really pulls a lot of its inspiration. So you're probably at least a little bit familiar with the Celtic take of paganism. Another big area of ancient paganism was Scandinavia and Northern Europe. The Norse and Germanic peoples of Scandinavia and Northern Europe practiced pagan religions that worshipped gods like Odin and Thor and Freya and Loki. And Norse paganism specifically involved rituals and sacrifices and myths centered around the gods and the cosmic order. Like, it really was macro in the sense that they saw their gods and goddesses from a really high lens, orchestrating things in a really grand scale. And of course, there were also pre-Columbian American takes on paganism as well. Before the arrival of Europeans in those areas, indigenous people of the Americas practiced various forms of pagan spirituality. These included the Aztec, the Maya, and the Inca civilizations in Mesoamerica and as well as South America. And other numerous indigenous tribes in North America who worshipped nature, spirits, ancestors, and celestial beings. And of course, we still see this happening in modern times. These are just a few examples of regions where paganism was prevalent in the ancient world, and what the umbrella term of paganism meant is kind of illustrated by these points here. Pagan religions varied widely in their beliefs and their practices and their cultural context and their gods and goddesses, but they often shared a common reverence for nature, mythology, and polytheism. Now, those are the three biggest indicators of a pagan religion. So if there's a particular part of the world or heritage that really calls to you, there's a good chance that you can look back at their ancient roots and find paganist spiritual practices to explore if you feel called to do so. Overall, in the ancient world, polytheistic religions really thrived, with many gods and goddesses representing various aspects of life and nature. There was pretty much a god or a goddess for everything you could possibly think of, and many of the deities represented many different things. These religions usually offered initiation rituals with promised spiritual enlightenment to various gods and goddesses. And from what I understand, pretty much all citizens of a given region partook in these religions, if not the majority of them. Like, it just kind of was part of their life, and it wasn't really separate from their everyday existence like it is for a lot of people in our modern times. Just kind of a different lifestyle. It was a different time, and the human race had a vastly different understanding of the world, especially when it comes to scientific discoveries, because that was basically starting back then, right? Religion, including specific gods and goddesses, provided the answers for literally everything, especially for the common people, before education was really valued on a widespread scale. There was a deity for everything, for every situation, every circumstance, anything you could ever possibly need or want or think of. You could bring in a god or a goddess that was specific to your area that could help you with it. There was a really deep reverence for nature and the cycles of seasons among our ancient ancestors all over the world. This is common for every single region. They just really were connected to nature in a way that we are not today. They lived much closer to nature than most of us do now, although there are many of us that strive for reestablishing that connection. And they showed their admiration for nature through rituals and ceremonies, festivals tied to the changing seasons every single year. Also, any natural phenomena that occurred, like aurora borealis or floods or any other natural disasters or anything like that, and all these sacred sites such as groves and mountains and bodies of water, all these things were seen as divine and extra special and connected to their religion, to the gods and goddesses. And this is still true today, especially with monotheistic religions. Like, think of mountains as an example. We still see mountains as a very special divine source of connection to God, because you're physically closer to God when you're on a mountain, right? So this reverence for nature hasn't really gone away in religion, but a lot of us don't have that same connection with nature that we, our ancient ancestors did. So it just kind of feels different when you start to look at it in a more sacred way. Because at the center of all ancient paganism religions are nature worship. Their gods and goddesses literally were the nature that surrounded them. And I just think that is so beautiful. And that's how I want to connect with nature in the 21st century. And I know many of you do too. This nature worship is a big reason why a lot of modern mystics really resonate with paganism, because we have kind of lost that connection to nature, right? The more our cities got built up, the more technology came to be and it's been integrated into our everyday life, we are craving that ancient connection that's always been with us, that natural feeling of being out in nature and feeling like we're part of the earth and part of something bigger than ourselves. Those cycles, they're really comforting to us on a cellular level. And not to mention that there are a lot of rituals and ceremonies and celebrations in all paganism belief systems that are centered around nature. This includes offerings and prayers and invocations and symbolic actions of all kinds. These rituals are often performed to honor the deities, of course, but to also mark important life events, spiritual festivals, or just seeking spiritual guidance and blessings in general. They just made it so magical in every way, and I really love that. And that's a lot of what I try to do in my own personal practices, and I know several of you feel similarly or at least want to get to that point. There was this beautiful blend of beliefs in the pagan Asian world, it seems. All the various flavors of paganism influenced each other as well. And with other religions such as Christianity and Judaism and Islam, they all kind of fed through each other before the monotheistic religions really became widespread. But of course, as you might know, that didn't really last super long. Persecution and conversion play a big role in the history of paganism across the ancient world and kind of how we got to where we are today with it. With the rise of specifically Christianity as the dominant religion in Europe and other parts of the world, pagan beliefs were often suppressed, persecuted, and forcibly converted. And while at the same time, Christianity was still heavily influenced by paganism, even if some people refused to believe that, it is absolutely true. And of course, a lot of destruction around pagan temples happened. There was banning of pagan rituals and the demonization of pagan deities as false gods or demons. This is still really common today, and one of the many reasons why people feel afraid of exploring paganism, depending on what their connection with specifically Christianity is. And I don't want to travel too far down that path today in this episode, because I want to focus mainly on paganism's survival and adaptation for modern mystics. Maybe I'll address the connection it has in the very various problems Christianity has caused for paganism specifically in a future episode, but for now, just know that within a relatively short amount of time, monotheistic religions outgrew and nearly snuffed out all polytheistic religions, and that is painful. That hurts my heart a little bit. But luckily, they only nearly succeeded. They didn't completely succeed. Despite persecution and conversion efforts that were often deadly, pagan beliefs and practices survived in various forms. They persisted in rural areas, remote regions, and among marginalized communities, and thank God they did. Thank gods and goddesses that they did. Pagan traditions adapted to new cultural and social contexts over time, sometimes incorporating elements from Christianity or other religions, and they were often practiced in secret. But now that we're kind of entering this new enlightened era of ascension for the collective, it's becoming so much more common to see people openly identifying with the label of pagan. And I just think that is so, so beautiful. I want to be part of it. If we fast forward all the way to today, to modern times, there is a healthy dose of what we call neo-paganism within the collective, especially since the 19th and 20th centuries, because there was a resurgence of interest in pagan spirituality and ancient traditions. This led to the emergence of modern pagan revival movements, such as Wicca and Druidy and Heathenry, which sought to revive and reconstruct and reinterpret these pre-Christian beliefs and practices. And I just have to tip my hat to those original people back in the 19th century who didn't let them die, and if anything, let these traditions find a new life and a new role to play in our modern society. I'm here for it. This is all really cool to me, and I hope it's cool to you too. All of you who have joined me at PaganCon and who have supported the Twin Cities Pagan Pride are part of this resurgence. And even if you didn't, if you're listening to this going, yeah, I want to know more about paganism, I want to adopt these more nature-based spiritual beliefs and explore the different gods and goddesses of this very specific pantheon of that I resonate with, then you are a part of this growing community of neo-paganism, and we just good for you. Applause to you. This year, 2024, was my very first year attending PaganCon, and I'm so excited to be surrounded by people who have the same reverence for nature and paganism and magic that I do, and just proof of concept. It's proof that there are so many more people out there than not that want that polytheistic connection to spirituality that other religions don't really offer. So it's just really cool to be part of a growing community and that has such beautiful ancient roots that has gone through a lot, to say the least. And I know many other communities can feel the same. For better or for worse, we don't live in the ancient world anymore. Those days are long gone, to say the least. Yet many forms of paganism have survived despite all the persecution and conversion that took place over the centuries. And like I said, I'm just really excited that that happened. I'm really proud of the people that made sure that their religion survived despite the various threats that they received. Neo-paganism refers to the contemporary religious and spiritual movements that draw inspiration on those pre-Christian pagan traditions, as well as many other mystical sources. This is the modern revival that we're talking about. It makes my heart so happy to know that it's gotten so significant in our culture, that entire conferences like PaganCon are being held to bring these people together under its name. Really cool. Neo-paganism really started to emerge specifically in the 20th century as a reaction to the dominant monotheistic religions that people weren't really finding what they were looking for in. They felt too dominated. They felt too limited. They felt like they were being controlled in ways they didn't want to be controlled, when really they just wanted to be closer to a god that they resonated with. I personally think that the ripple effects of the Industrial Revolution brought many people further away from nature, and we're still feeling that today. And that resulted in people mourning the loss of that nature connection we used to depend on. And many monotheistic religions don't really have this emphasis on nature connection. Many people find their way back to nature and that beautiful connection with God in their own way. But the organized religion as a whole, at least in the way I experienced, specifically Christianity, didn't really have that. And we crave that. Humans crave that connection with nature. So that's one of the reasons why I personally think paganism is making a resurgence nowadays, because we want that. We feel that in our DNA and we want to have that extra special sacred connection. So large groups of people started to realize back in the 20th century that they wanted to reestablish some of those ancient spiritual practices. Like, they consciously made the effort and said, okay, guys, it's time. Let's look back at these pagan traditions that were long dated in our history, and we want to bring them back in a way that makes sense for us now. These pagan beliefs were reconstructed very purposefully to fit the new modern age. And again, this still includes rituals and practices and folklore and mythology and ceremonial magic, all the things that we love that feel right to those of us who practice them, they still exist. But now they exist in a context that makes more sense for us in the 21st century and not 1,000 years ago or more. And of course, it just kind of keeps snowballing from here, right? Neo-paganism is essentially the new umbrella term for polytheistic religions and spiritually inspired practices that are centered around nature. It draws on a wide range of sources, such as the ones already mentioned, like the Greeks and the Romans and the Celts and the Norse. And it also incorporates elements of Western esoteric traditions, which we know became prevalent in the 20th century as well, which include astrology and divination, crystal healing, and all that magic. What really makes neo-paganism awesome is this eclecticism and this diversity. Modern mystics often create their own unique spiritual paths by cherry-picking from various traditions, beliefs, and practices. And this is okay because paganism is an umbrella term and we're not following a specific religion, so we have the freedom to just kind of make it our own. Some may focus on specific cultural influences that they resonate with, while others blend elements to develop an entirely new approach to spirituality that suits them and their specific desires and influences and whatever else. I am here for all of this because it's not the same as a more conventional religion. This is spirituality, not religion. We're at a point in our collective and spiritual evolution where we can find God and goddesses and magic in many different places other than organized religion. And I personally believe that this is part of the ascension process that the collective is going through right now. There are all kinds of reasons why people do or do not want to participate in an organized religion. It's highly personal. But what we all have in common is a connection to something divine, something greater than ourselves, a higher power that exists both within us and beyond us. And I believe that neo-paganism creates this lovely opportunity to explore what spirituality means to you in your own way, at your own pace, with your own definitions. And you can choose what words you want to use, what you want to leave out, what you want to practice and what you don't, and how it incorporates into your everyday life. And this is what it means to be a modern mystic. I can't speak for everyone, obviously, but I do feel intuitively, and from talking to all kinds of mystical people over the years, that the collective is still moving in a direction of reclaiming ancient spiritual beliefs found in this wide umbrella term called paganism. Interest in spirituality and neo-paganism specifically grows every single year. It has gained recognition and acceptance in many countries thanks to its many thousands of participants and people being more and more comfortable openly talking about it. And in some places, there are even legal protections surrounding it thanks to religious freedom laws, which is really cool. Establishments exist in the form of neo-pagan organizations, temples and community groups, it's not uncommon to hear someone identify as pagan anymore, which is just so freaking cool. Great times we're living in. Overall, neo-paganism represents a dynamic and evolving expression of contemporary spirituality, drawing on ancient traditions while also adapting to modern cultural, social, and environmental thought waves. All these things play a role in creating a new wave of neo-paganism and what it means to each of us as individuals. Do you feel like neo-paganism resonates with you? It definitely resonates with me. Ever since learning about the reverence of nature and the vast amounts of gods and goddesses several years ago, my personal spiritual journey has really bloomed, particularly when it comes to connecting with the seasons. It brings me so much joy and fulfillment to see the seasons as something deeper, not just something that is happening when I'm staring at them through a window, but rather understanding that they're a reflection of the life cycle of the earth, as well as the cycles of my own life. It's just kind of helped me realize that I'm part of something bigger, and it feels really good to realize that. And I also personally love bringing in the work of deities into my spiritual practices. Like I mentioned, a lot of my heritage comes from Celtic traditions, and they have some really cool gods and goddesses that just feel right when I learn about them, and I feel connected to them when I learn about them. And I hope that anyone listening who is interested in bringing in a more divine aspect into your spirituality feels inspired to do so after this episode. But I can't talk about paganism without also specifically talking about Wicca. I have gotten a lot of questions about Wicca since doing my Wheel of the Year series several years ago, and I have dabbled a bit in it as well, although I don't identify as Wiccan. This is another example of neo-paganism. Wicca is essentially like the neo-paganistic religion. I'm guessing that at least some of you listening will resonate strongly with this brand new nature-focused religion. So I just wanted to share what I know about it and hope that you can learn more if you want. So again, Wicca is a modern pagan religion that was founded in the mid-20th century, right when neo-paganism was gaining a resurgence kind of in general, but Wicca kind of is a subgroup of that. And just like neo-paganism, it brings together spiritual inspiration from a wide variety of sources, including pre-Christian pagan traditions, ceremonial magic, folklore, and Western esotericism that we all know and love. Wicca is often attributed to Gerald Gardner, who was a British civil servant and an amateur anthropologist, who claimed to have been initiated into a coven of witches in the New Forest region of England in the 1930s. Gardner's writings, particularly his books called Witchcraft Today from 1954, The Meaning of Witchcraft in 1959, helped popularize Wicca and introduce its beliefs and practices to a wider audience. And it just kind of, again, snowballed into what it is today, which is its own thing. It's really cool. I love that it's like brand new. It's so awesome. So while Gardner is considered to be the founder of Wicca as a modern religious movement, he drew heavily on existing occult traditions, folk magic, and of course ceremonial magic, as well as Freemasonry and the works of figures like Aleister Crowley and Margaret Murray. Wicca also incorporated elements of ancient pagan religions, of course, and particularly those of Western Europe. So when you start diving into the world of Wicca and Wiccan practices, you'll find that a lot of European pagan traditions are really prevalent, which makes sense because he was British. Wicca is generally considered to be polytheistic, acknowledging the existence of multiple deities. The most common Wiccan deities are a horned god, often associated with nature, wilderness, and fertility, and also a triple goddess representing the phase of the moon and aspects of femininity known as the mother, the maiden, and the crone. Personally, I love the mother, maiden, and crone representation of femininity. I reference it a lot in my tarot readings and in my just kind of feminist beliefs in general. So I personally have cherry-picked that one specifically because I really love that. Like traditional paganism, Wicca emphasizes reverence for nature and the cycles of the season, and this is where the Wheel of the Year comes from. Practitioners often celebrate 8 seasonal festivals, known as the Sabbats, which mark key points in the solar and agricultural calendar. Think the solstices, the equinoxes, and the cross-quarter days. That's what we call the Wheel of the Year. That is what I just said there is the Wheel of the Year. And this is unique to Wicca specifically. Pagans didn't really have a wheel, even though they celebrated many of the equinoxes and the solstices, but not in this sort of cyclical, conceptualized way where we look at a map of the seasons through the Wheel of the Year. Like, it definitely existed. They knew that they had the solstices and the equinoxes, but this modern resurgence brought us the Wheel of the Year, which is like a map that we can follow through the seasons. And I personally really like it. I really like the Wheels of the Year. And by the way, the Wheel of the Year does change between the two hemispheres of Earth because they experience the seasons differently. So if you're Wiccan in the Northern Hemisphere, you're going to be celebrating a different solstice when the Wiccans of the Southern Hemisphere are celebrating one solstice. So just throwing that out there, depending on where you are in the world. So another big thing about Wicca is witchcraft. Wicca witchcraft. Magic and witchcraft are quite prominent in Wicca, and most Wicca practitioners really do resonate with the identity of witch. Not all of them, but a lot of them do. And this is different from pagans because they don't necessarily practice magic. That is unique to Wiccan practices. This is one of those reasons why so many people love Wicca, because ultimately we just want to be witches in the woods, in cottages, picking herbs and waving wands around, right? Like, who doesn't want to be a modern witch and cast spells? I know I do. I have also found that many people find their way to paganism through the lens of Wicca, which is just really beautiful. We just love those witchy vibes, right? And I personally love how it combines modern lifestyles with ancient practices, and it like makes for this magical cocktail of, you know, I'm out in my garden, but then I can go inside my house and like make a little altar. And I really love it. It's so freaking cool. So that is one of the biggest differences between Wicca and paganism. Central components of the spiritual practice of Wicca are these magical rituals and what we call spellcraft. These rituals may involve casting circles, invoking deities, working with symbols known as sigils, and correspondences, and chanting, and visualizations, and the use of magical tools such as wands, and athames, and chalices, and crystal healing, and whatever else. Not to mention herbs, and offerings, and altars, and just so much more. Wiccan people can practice within covens, or as a solitary witch if they choose. Covens are groups led by trained priests and priestesses called high priests and high priestesses. And again, this is unique to Wicca. Covens may meet for rituals, for ceremonies, for study, and for community events, especially on those coveted solstices and equinoxes. Additionally, many Wiccans practice as solitary practitioners, as well as being part of covens, following their own spiritual path and being part of a group too. Wiccan covens are known for celebrating those rituals and those festivals based on the cycles of nature, as well as the phases of the moon. Again, these are the Sabbats, the seasonal festivals, and the lunar rituals, and the initiations, and the hand fastings, which are considered to be Wiccan weddings, and other rites of passage. So it is a religion in the most literal sense of the word, but it seems so much more magical and, of course, pagan-inspired than some of the other religions out there. So a lot of people are discovering that they really resonate with Wicca, and it's a beautiful thing. Speaking of rites of passages, Wicca often involves training and initiation, similar to many other organized religions. And these specialized trainings bring practitioners through levels of knowledge based on experience, and you can kind of climb the ranks a little bit, very similar to other religions out there, especially monotheistic ones. Personal practices are still really important in Wicca, just like most religions. We go to church. We also keep the spiritual connection alive on our own time in our own way. Many Wiccans incorporate personal practices into their spiritual lives, such as meditation and divination and spell work and herbalism and creative expression, casting spells, whatever works for them. Another thing that is unique to Wicca is the moral code, known as the Wiccan Read. And personally, this is another thing that I've kind of cherry-picked from Wicca. Although I don't identify personally as a Wiccan, I do follow a lot of the Wiccan practices, especially the Wiccan Read. It states, "Any harm none, do what you will. If it harms none, do what you will." This emphasizes personal responsibility and ethical behavior, as well as the belief in karma, or the law of return, which suggests that the energy one puts out into the world will be returned to them threefold. And I just know that this is true. I've seen this happen for myself and for others, so maybe you didn't have a word for it before, but if you believed in that, maybe now you have a word for it. So also another key indicator of religions is that they have a book that they follow, right? There's Bibles of all kinds out there. They go by many names. And in Wicca, you might find that people and covens create their own sacred books. And this is referred to as their grimoire or their books of shadow or book of shadows, same thing. Their use and their significance can vary greatly depending on individual needs and beliefs. And there is no one specific grimoire or book of shadows. It's created by each individual in each group, which is unique to this religion. But there's still like a written creed that they follow. And I think that's so beautiful. The idea of creating your own sacred book has always really intrigued me. Essentially, a grimoire is a book of magical knowledge containing instructions for witch rolls, spells, charms. It has information about correspondences and other pertinent knowledge that is important to how that individual or that coven practices. Grimoires have a long history in Western occultism, dating back centuries, and they often draw upon a blend of mystical and religious and folkloric traditions. And again, they are unique to each individual. In Wicca, the use of grimoires is not universal. Not everyone has one, as the religion emphasizes personal experience and intuition and individual spiritual growth. However, some Wiccans may find value in using grimoires as tools for study, for inspiration, and for practical magic. It also can be like a form of creative expression. It's just a way to keep all of your magical things in one place. Grimoires can provide guidance on ceremonies and magical techniques and symbols of herbs and stones and colors and all kinds of things. I love when people are willing to share their grimoires on the internet because it's a very private thing and you're not obligated to share it at all. But I love being able to see other people's grimoires, like what they put in them. It's just so cool to me. And grimoires also have the potential to be beautiful heirlooms for covens and for individuals to pass down to others who will cherish its sacredness. These are books where sacred knowledge and rituals are recorded to help these witches explore and learn more about magic. So if that's something that really interests you, maybe explore that a little bit more. Of course, not all Wiccans use grimoires. Some may prefer to rely on oral tradition because that kind of keeps it a little bit more sacred. A lot of people draw on personal intuition when they do these sort of spell works and ceremonies, and they're not really wanting to follow a specific recipe, if you will. Or there are other contemporary books and resources out there that they use for their magical practices. But ultimately, the use of grimoires or a book of shadows in Wicca is a matter of personal preference and spiritual guidance. And each practitioner may choose to incorporate them or not, according to their own beliefs and needs. And this is yet another thing that makes Wicca unique in the sense that, yes, there are books, but you're not required to go by this book. And even if you do want a book, you're making it completely from scratch. Unlike some other organized religions where the book already exists and you can just go to Barnes & Noble and just pick up the book for your chosen religion. That's not really the case with Wicca, although I'm sure you could totally find pre-made grimoires at Barnes & Noble too, but there's no like one, like there is no the grimoire, like there's the Bible, right? So this is something else that's unique about Wicca, is that it's really intended for you to make it your own. And of course, if you're inspired by this, if this resonates with you, I really encourage you to make it your own. Ultimately, paganism and Wicca are spiritual paths that are based around a sacred connection to nature, to Mother Earth, to gods and goddesses, and of course, building a community, one that brings us closer to not only each other and to Mother Earth, but something greater than ourselves. It's diverse, it's ancient, it's modern all at the same time. It's truly a beautiful way of life that awakens us to the sacredness of the world around us and how we don't have to rely on what anyone else says that of the sacredness. We can find it within ourselves and create our own definitions. It opens the door for us to be unique in our spiritually inspired lives. It helps us honor the mysteries of existence and to walk in harmony with the rhythms of nature and the cycles of life and to make our own definitions, to carve our own paths and or follow the paths of others before us. It's just, there's a lot of freedom here and it's such a beautiful thing. This is a celebration of the human spirit, a testament to the enduring power of myth and magic, and a reminder that the infinite possibilities for healing, for transformation, and for renewal all lie within all of us. If you enjoyed this episode, then you might also enjoy episode 159, where I interviewed the lovely Izzy Wells of Reiki Cafe all about shamanism, which is another beautiful way of life that is revered and sacred, and I'll just let her explain. But if you like paganism, you'll definitely also enjoy shamanism. Before we sign off for this week, I wanted to extend an extra special thank you to all of my monthly supporters who choose to kindly donate to Spiritually Inspired. Your support means the world to me, and I sincerely hope that you enjoy your exclusive member benefits, which include weekly guided Reiki meditations and personalized monthly tarot card readings. To check out these exclusive member benefits for yourself, you can go to spirituallyinspired.co/membership at any time. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed. This has been episode 175 of the Spiritually Inspired podcast called Paganism and Wicca for Modern Mystics. I'm Sarah Ray, your manifesting coach and crystal Reiki master. And as you go on your way today, know that I am sending you an abundance of love, light, and inspiration. Blessed be. Hey you, yeah you, the mystical one. You are warmly invited to our next Reiki share inside of our free Facebook group. Twice per week, I go live on camera to offer channeled guidance from spirit and healing energy to all those who need it and want it, with replays always available. And I would be honored if you would be a part of these magical circles. Go to spirituallyinspired.co/freegroup to become a member for free and get your fill of healing crystal Reiki. I can't wait to see you in the group. Bye, friends.